Hello, welcome to Locked On Suns, part of Locked On Podcast Network. Today, as always, my host, Evan Sedner, and joined by co-host, Brendan Clean. You can follow me on Twitter at eSedner. You can follow Brendan on Twitter at BrendanClean14. Also, for our Locked On Suns Twitter page, if you haven't already, at Locked On PHX Suns. Your support is very much appreciated, as always. We're joining you right outside Talkstar Resort Arena, inside Talkstar Resort Arena, inside the Bounce Talkstar Resort Arena. In the media room right now, the Pistons beat the Phoenix Suns 118-98 tonight, 20-point loss for the Suns. It's been a while since we had a 20-point loss, but 17-56 for the Phoenix Suns this season.
I didn't miss them.
No, it's been a while, and it's come back in the worst possible way because the Josh Jackson injury. We'll start off with that because it's going to be a little different recap today with the blowout loss. We're going to go just a little all over the place here, speak about Josh Jackson's injury, also our main takeaways, plus also hit on a little bit of NCAA tournament for you guys. So let's dive right into it, Brendan. Josh Jackson got hurt about 5 minutes left in the third quarter. They were only down by 4 points at that point. Yeah. Then all of a sudden the Pistons just blowed open. They end up winning by 20 over the last 17 minutes of that game. So it seemed like that Josh Jackson injury, they officially said right ankle sprain. I don't know if that's confirmed or not. It seemed like it was, but yeah. What do you think about that injury and just how it changes the morale for this team and also looking forward?
Yeah, I mean, not just the morale, but bodies, you know?
It's going to be seven or eight of them.
It's going to be interesting to see what they do, especially because they, as we talked about yesterday, went with to fill one of the roster spots, Jimmer Fredette, who is not a wing and can't really defend anybody. So that's not the type of guy who's ideally filling in for Kelly Oubre or Josh Jackson. So we talked about yesterday the most likely situation was Tyler Johnson maybe being shut down as a result of that. Now we have the Oubre news that we haven't talked about that on the pod either. He is getting thumb surgery and will miss the remainder of the year. And now Jackson.
Plus TJ Warren still.
Warren still. And it doesn't seem like, based on how bad it looked, how much pain Jackson was obviously in on the floor tonight.
It looked worse than it was.
It looked worse than an ankle sprain. And Igor said nothing major, which is a good sign. But who knows what it specifically is or what the time frame is. It doesn't look like the kind of thing that's going to be rushed back, even if it was not a tear or anything. He was in a lot of pain. So it wouldn't surprise me if he's out for the year. And that's, I think, the main thing there is they probably weren't going to be very competitive without Oubre or Johnson or Warren anyway, but now it's just who plays.
Yeah. It's really interesting to see how the minutes go moving forward without Oubre, without TJ Warren, and without possibly Josh Jackson the rest of the season. That's three out of your four wings now. So Mikal Bridges could be literally playing the last 8 or 9 games this season, 40-plus minutes per game.
Yeah, and the Pistons make it a little bit easier because they play big in the front court but mostly have guards for the rest of their roster. They don't have traditional threes, so it was a little easier to get away with lineups like Crawford, Booker, and Daniels or Melton, or however they did it tonight. It's not gonna work against other teams. Maybe they don't have a choice, but it's gonna get even more ugly against bigger teams. And I would assume we see a name, but like, even if it's a G League player or if it's another team's recently cut player or some guy from overseas whose season ends or something, it's going to be rough.
I'd be remiss not to say this on the podcast, but do you know who's a free agent, Brennan?
I do know who's a free agent.
Carmelo Anthony, and they do need a wing. But I'm just kidding. You guys should know I'm just kidding about that. But just looking at the roster right now, they only have one wing left and possibly three out for the season. He's sitting there on the open market. I mean,
we talked about filling seats with Jimmer. You know who fills seats is Melo. People love that guy. If as many real people like him as there are Twitter people who like him, then he's the most popular player in the NBA. So it would certainly make the rest of the year a little more interesting here.
Yeah, for sure. And we're getting Jimmermania. That still hasn't officially happened yet. Yeah, there's been no release about that. But we'll see Jimmer Fredette sometime soon. But let's focus more on the game itself. It just seemed like, obviously, the Josh Jackson injury really took the momentum out of it for the Suns. They were only a 4-point game, like I mentioned, and they got blown out the rest of the way. But looking at the box scores here, Mikal Bridges, I mean, he put together a great game. 13 points, 7 assists, and a steal. Another great game as far as assists go for Bridges. I asked Igor after the game about that. Just, it seems like he's constantly growing, and he doesn't want to put too much pressure on him, but he's obviously relying and putting a lot of trust on him already.
Yeah, Igor is very cautious when he talks about Mikal. He's, like, careful not to heap too much praise on him. He's not getting animated and excited about it even when he has pretty good nights. And obviously it would be a little awkward if he's jumping up and down about one player in a 20-point loss. So I get it to a certain degree, but all year it's sort of felt that way. He's you know, we know what Mikhail's going to be. We know he's a great player. He's taking on a lot more responsibility than we were expecting. Kind of the same answer all season, even when he's had great nights like this. And he was amazing off the ball. He was creating points out of thin air by cutting and catching the Pistons defense sleeping a little bit, using the length. Like we mentioned, the Pistons are a pretty small team, so he was able to finish over their smaller defenders pretty easily tonight, passing, as we said, 7 assists, one short of his career high here. And he has a crazy ability to pass out of cuts, which just timing wise seems impossible, but he just has the instincts to do it. And getting that drop pass to the guy in the dunker spot is getting so easy for him. He had a couple to Ayton today. So if there is a bright spot with Jackson going down and Oubre going down, it's consistent role for Bridges. He's going to be starting. We're going to see a lot of him, and maybe we'll see some bigger scoring nights as well.
Yeah, his usage has been around 11-12% this year, so I think the last 8 or 9 games could be way higher than that. But what about Bridges? It makes more sense to me. Just, we were talking about next to each other at the game, just the progressions we're seeing out of him as a playmaker, it just rapidly happening. I mean, not even just playmaking overall, just other parts of his game, especially his aggressiveness too. Just what's staying out with a guy like Mikhail Bridges, because he has such a high basketball IQ and he has such the drive to get better that it's really showing. And I'm really, we were talking about during the game, I think we're both really excited about what year two could be for him.
Yeah, I think what stands out honestly is what he's not doing, not even in what he can't do, but literally what he isn't doing, because you feel like he has the ability to handle so much more on both ends of the floor. So when he's not taking an open shot and trying to find a better shot, or when he, you know, doesn't get to have the ball in his hands for, you know, 2-3 minutes in a row, or when he's defending somebody off the ball and not having the impact of his length and versatility on that end show up, it almost feels frustrating as a viewer, because it's like, well, this guy has so much potential. But I think it's another, similar to what we've talked about with DeAndre Ayton throughout the year, indication of how slowly and patiently they want to bring these young guys along and build them into a role and expand from there. And it's easier to see with Ayton because we saw him do so much more in college, and now he's had to do less. Whereas Bridges, it's just like, it feels just below the surface there, and we just haven't always been able to see it.
Yeah, I was telling you during the game, I feel like if he had the unlimited green light, he'd be just an unreal player right now, even as a rookie. But let's go on to our next few players here before we go on our next segment. Just quickly going over DeAndre and Devin Booker's nights. They had 20 points, 8 rebounds for Ayton, but Booker also put in 26 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists, 8 of 10 from the free throw in 32 minutes. That's, I think, his third or fourth straight night, getting at least 10 free throw attempts. So we'll start off with Booker, then go to Ayton. What stood out with you as far as Booker tonight? Just vintage game for him again, just putting up at least 25 points, 5 assists, something like that. Just great line from him, but obviously in a blowout loss, it doesn't really matter. And it seemed Booker was obviously frustrated after that loss.
Yeah, different story first half to second half, I think, was kind of the deal with him tonight. And 7 of 10, right, in the first half, and then 1 of 7 in the second half. Only scored 6 points in the second half. So
Detroit also changed their defense in the second half, too. They doubled him almost every time.
Yeah, they blitzed him, and they were doing what so many teams have done this year against him. And it's really just the way to beat him. It's pretty simple. Like, if the other players aren't making plays, and in this case, if there weren't very many other players to begin with, there's nothing that can be done. And it's a testament to the roster building that we've talked about all year, that such a basic defensive principle, just an adjustment at halftime, can just completely render him useless, as talented as he is. It's pretty remarkable how little else there is on a night like this, where one little switch from the Pistons and they won the game. It was literally that.
It really is just crazy to see just how that happened. And I think with the Brooklyn game, that was Ayton earlier this season, but the Denver game, I think, was one where it stood out to me, where they kind of just took him out of the game after he got a huge first half, and then he just went away after that. But one more thing on him with Booker is just interesting to me, is what's going to happen now with the Jackson injury. And you also talk about the other injuries on the roster. What do you think is going to happen now with a guy like Booker and his minutes moving forward the last 8 or 9 games this season? I think it could be like Burr's playing over 40 minutes per game.
Yeah, I was going to ask him if he thought it signaled like a more of a commitment to the future to have himself and others playing at the end of the year, because we've seen his whole career basically. It gets to March and April and guys get shut down with mysterious injuries. We're seeing a lot of injuries, but they're actually legit this time around. So I would be interested to hear his perspective. But I think to me it does – he described as an opportunity, which I think is kind of what he has to say. He's the leader of the team. He can't just say, oh, yeah, pack it up, 10 games left, screw it, we're not going to win any of them. That would be wild to hear. So, of course, he's going to be positive, but I think there is some truth in that. You know, we've talked all year about wanting to see more. We just said the same thing about Bridges. Melton's another good example of that. Maybe we see more of Eliakobo a little bit. Dragan Bender has 10 games left of his contract.
32 minutes tonight, by the way.
Yeah, and been playing well, as we've been hitting on. So guys like that, it is an opportunity. It doesn't even really matter if they win or lose at this point. It's just, will we and can we see more from those guys? And I think Booker's taking that challenge of leading them seriously.
It's kind of just like last year. I mean, we came into last year saying this whole year is about player development. Yeah. And really just this year wasn't about that. But really now with all these injuries, the last 8 or 9 games is just about player development at this point, especially with them only having 17 wins at this point. But let's go to DeAndre Ayton really quick before we go on our next segment here. 20 points, 8 rebounds. He had 5 fouls, only played 25 minutes, 9 of 12 from the field. Really great first half for me. He had 14 points. But then early on in the second half of that game, he just got taken out with fouls and really just canceled out a really great half by him.
Yeah, got especially the first quarter, got really off to a great start. And then the Detroit size was just too much. 26 rebounds combined between their two guys. 11 on the offensive glass just for Drummond. Particularly bad matchup, I think, for Ayton. That type of energy, strong, physical player we've seen get the best of him over and over this year. And I think credit to him for scoring and 8 rebounds of his own. It wasn't as if he got completely just smacked, but there's only so much you can do, especially when your 4 is Dragan Bender, who's not really going to help in the rebounding category and not as much help on defense as he's used to. I think everybody, I think it comes back to the shorthandedness. And I think that's why Igor had so little to say when we talked to him post-game. It's like, what do you want me to do at a certain point?
Put your hands up at that point and shrug, just because there really is nothing else you can do. But anything else you want to hit on as far as the game before we go on to our next segment? Alrighty, before we go on to that, I want to tell you guys really quickly, if you haven't already, go ahead and follow at LockedOnNBA now on Twitter. It is our LockedOnNBA Twitter account. Brent and I both follow, and also our accounts are also synced on there if you enjoy our Phoenix Suns coverage, which I know you guys do here on Locked On Suns. But if you only listen to Suns-related coverage, you might be missing out on a lot of great voice around the Locked On NBA network. So if you haven't already done so, go on Apple Podcasts, wherever you find your podcast, subscribe to the Locked On NBA show, and also before you do that, give a follow at LockedOnNBA now.
I want to also remind you guys to take advantage of Homie if you're looking to buy or sell your dream home this year. The best place to do that is Homie. If you want to save money, and I don't see why you wouldn't, buying and selling a home can typically be just insanely frustrating, insanely costly, on top of all of the changes that are going on in your life already when you move. So for a flat rate of $1,500, Homie will list and sell your home and provide you with a team of attorneys and real estate agents who have your back but don't nickel and dime you like normal, and an infrastructure with an app and everything that is going to make the process a breeze. To learn more about my friends at Homie, text Homie, that's H-O-M-I-E, to 88588. Again, text Homie, H-O-M-I-E, to 88588. All right, so do we want to do more, take more from this game, or talk about Ja Morant?
Quickly, let's just go over just a few more points in the box score. I don't think we have to talk about specific players. Just looking at the box score overall, just your main takeaways from that. And for me, what stood off the page there while you're talking about our friends at Homie was Andre Drummond, 11 offensive rebounds. The total rebounds for them was also 46-35. Offensive rebounds, though, 19-7. Andre Drummond by himself had more offensive rebounds than the Phoenix Suns did. That seems like obviously, it was a 20-point loss, so it really didn't matter in the end. But the biggest, I think, number to look at here is this, again, the rebound differential, which continues to kill this team.
Yeah, I think it was the thing I was watching today going into the game because of the Pistons' size and two of the better rebounders in the league. And it definitely showed up. I mean, not only was it the bigs, though, I think the more concerning thing, if you're a Suns fan, that you would look at is 3 each on the offensive glass for Langston Galloway and Ish Smith. That's just the impact, I think, of guys who are dedicated boxing out and creating loose balls for their teammates to go and get. But this is coming off of a game where Zach LaVine had 8 rebounds. So I think you can point to the bigs and say that that's the issue. And I'm not watching closely on every rebound opportunity to see what's going on. Drummond boxes out even when he doesn't get the rebound. That's going to make life easier for his teammates. And same with Robin Lopez. Veterans like that are going to do that. But everybody needs to be competing on the glass a little bit more. And, you know, we've seen big rebounding nights from Melton and Bridges in the past. We've seen Bender have good nights, even if they're very few and far between. So we can narrow it down to Ayton versus the other center a lot of nights. And I think it is big. Obviously tonight, 19-8, it was big, but it's a team thing, and it's a problem that is inflicting the whole team as well.
I think the one thing I noticed is throughout the last 20 or so games, and really I've noticed throughout the season, but really it's taken on a life of its own. It's just when I watch the ball go up out after an opposing player shoots it, none of the guys box out. They literally just watch the ball go up, and then they go after it. It just seems like it's just a young team that just still learned the basics of it.
Yeah, and it's weird that it seems – I mean, it's something we take for granted, but it's huge, and it's been hurting them all season long.
Absolutely. So that was my one box score to watch here. I mean, there's really nothing else to take away from my end of this because it was just a wash of this game, another 20-point loss for the Phoenix Suns. But what was your main – if you want to look at the box score, your main takeaway?
I mean, I think it would, you know, number-wise, another thing that we've hit on basically every night this year, and I think speaks to the lack of experience that was on the court tonight and lack of chemistry with different guys playing in lineups that they're uncomfortable in, would be 19 turnovers. Yeah. And honestly, I mean, the leader in that category, as it's been a lot of nights this season, was Booker. But when those assists don't go, it gets a lot uglier in that turnover category to see a 2-5 assist ratio for your – tonight he was the starting point guard.
Yeah.
So – and not a particularly great defensive team, especially at the guard spot. You know, he had
– Reggie Jackson.
Yeah. Reggie Jackson, and then he had, you know, in bench units, they were defending him with Langston Galloway and different guys. Like, he had every opportunity to dominate, and that blitzing in the second half really just took everything away from him.
It just seems like also just once the game got out of hand there, it just seemed like it was kind of like, okay, it's game over at that point. So really nothing else to add on here as far as the box score goes. The 20-point loss for Phoenix Suns are now 17-56 on the season. But let's go into our final segment here, Brent. I know it's not a part of the game here, but it's really taken over the Phoenix Suns discussion here on Twitter and other outlets the past 24 hours. Ja Morant went off in his first NCAA tournament game. He had a triple-double, and it's the 8th time in NCAA history. The first is Dwayne Wade and Marquette, and ironically, it was against Marquette. So what do you think about just Ja Morant's performance today in the March Madness tournament? Obviously, the Suns have a big need at point guard, and I've already seen people on Suns Twitter are like, hey, guys, is Zion Williamson really this good? Is Ja Morant actually better than him? And I'm like, both me and you both had the exact same reaction at the same time. I know it's probably going to happen on local radio tomorrow, so just bear with us. But no, Ja Morant is not on the same stratosphere as Zion Williamson. I know he's a great prospect. He's the second best prospect in this draft class. We both agree on that. But Zion is literally in a tier or two or three tiers above everyone else in this class.
Yeah, if he forces us into a situation where we're having to defend a number one prospect, again, I'm going to be furious. This is not difficult. There's not a number two anywhere near. This isn't Luka versus Ayton. This is whichever guy you liked last year, and then, like, compare that to, like, Jerome Robinson. Yeah, like, yeah. That's the gulf this year. So, and I think Ja's incredible. I would be interested to see how he would fit here, but if you don't have ESPN Plus and you weren't able to catch Murray State this year, that's understandable. Enjoy him, and he's going to be exciting to watch this whole tournament as far as he goes. Imagining him running pick and roll with DeAndre Ayton with Devin Booker running around off ball is fascinating. He's not better than Zion, and that's fine because if the Suns get the number two pick, they might have to take him, and that'll be, you know, perfect, and getting to see him against elite competition is good, but that discussion is a little bit silly. I feel like it's just the media needing to make more of a buzz about something than there is, and maybe it's also they should have had Duke play today so Zion could also remember everybody how great he is, remind everybody how great he is. So, but what did you think of Ja today, and did he show you anything that he hasn't already?
I will admit, I was watching the game with a few people, and I was kind of blown away a little bit with some of the passes I saw today from him, because some of the passes he was doing, I did not see in the regular season. A lot of, like, three-fourths of his pass were was offhand. Like, you don't see that from a point guard really much at all. And
he's,
I think,
he really can use both hands. You see it finishing, too. I think it was Kevin O'Connor who said he doesn't finish with his right hand very often. He prefers to finish with his left hand. So he has that weird strength in both arms for sure.
It really is. He's an interesting prospect. At this point, if he wins against Florida State tomorrow, he's going to be an enigma at this point. He's going to be a guy who's going to be blowing up all over not only college basketball scene, but the national scene as well. So I asked a former NBA executive today about what he would do in this situation. If the Suns do land number two overall, we've had this discussion on the podcast a couple times with reader questions, also just our own mocks discussions, but a Jrue Holiday, Ja Morant discussion, which I found really interesting from a former NBA executive who asked this question. If the Suns land number two overall,
Jim Paxson?
Unfortunately not. But Ja Morant, you have number two overall. If the Suns get number two overall, and we're being cautious here because the Suns could easily fall in the lottery here. But just in this hypothetical example, they land number two overall. They don't get Zion Williamson, but they get the rights to Ja Morant if they want to. But you have the option to trade for the pick for a guy like Jrue Holiday, who, as you guys know on the podcast, we're big fans of. I think he fits perfectly next to Devin Booker, DeAndre, et cetera. The response I got back, surprisingly, from the former NBA executive was he would prefer Ja Morant over Jrue Holiday, because the main reason being that he's an elite talent, the passing vision's elite, and he can see, obviously, why Booker and Aiden would fit well next to him. But also, the contract, I think, is the big thing here that he focused on, too. You have 7 to 9 years of Ja Morant. You have maybe 1 or 2 years of Jrue Holiday. And not even including Jrue Holiday in this discussion, Mike Conley, any other point guard as well. Adding in the rookie scale contract, I think, plays a little bit of a factor here, but I don't think it should play that much of a factor. So how do you read the situation of if they do land a number two overall or have the ability to draft a guy like Ja Morant? Are you comfortable right now after seeing one game in the NCAA tournament and also what we've seen throughout the year where you would take Morant if you still got offers for like a Jrue Holiday or a Mike Conley, for example?
It's going to be a tough decision, and I think the point about having a player for longer is always going to be valid. That's the thought process behind the process and the timeline, if that even is still a thing. And so it's valid, of course. But what I said to you, hearing you say that the first time, was the first 2 or 3 years of that are going to be painful.
Yeah.
And I just don't know if at this point they might finish with a lower win total than last year's team, which was one of the worst in NBA history statistically. If you can stomach 2 to 3 years of, I mean, imagine, look how bad Elia Kobo's been.
Even De'Aaron Fox year one.
Yeah. And maybe, you know, the best case scenario is that jump from year one to year two, because then you have 1 year of growing pains and then you have a great player there. But that's remarkable. That's why De'Aaron Fox was the apple of everyone's eye for the first 4 months of the year, because what he did was crazy. That doesn't happen like that. So he's a great player. I don't know. I mean, I think that I would probably – they have the money to spend this summer. They have a core that's ready to go. I feel like I still lean toward a veteran. But, again, I'm not – I think that will be different for people who haven't been thinking about that question all season. Yeah. And I think that's why we're seeing such a debate going on, is because people have – it's never occurred to people that he's so great, Morant. Yeah. So now it's the first time they're being confronted like, wow, this is a whole nother avenue. I don't have to – put all my eggs in the veteran basket. I can get this shiny new toy. And so it's going to be huge, but I still think I would lean toward, like you said, maybe not Jrue, but somebody in that category.
I tweeted it today, so I can't go back on it. I would actually take Ja Morant at this point, just because I think just the upside, you also, I want to see how he's defensively too. I wonder if he gets better, like a Ben Simmons situation at LSU, like if he's actually next to a Mikal Bridges, next to a Josh Jackson.
He's bigger than a lot of point guards too.
Yeah, he is. He's really wiry, yeah.
He's similar physically to De'Aaron Fox. I mean, a little thinner, but similar long and athletic guy. So
that actually is the physical comp that the former executive gave me, was De'Aaron Fox. So interesting, we both brought that up there. But as far as Ja Morant goes, we can probably wrap up on this question here with Ja. There's been debate about, obviously not with Zion Williamson, but there's going to be probably some minority of the Suns Twitter or anyone else here, Suns fans, might be trying to bang the drum as far as Team Ja over Team Zion. We're not going to do that on Locked On Suns, but what do you think about Ja Morant moving up past a guy like RJ Barrett, who's consensually a number two guy on the draft boards? I think I'm there. I'm pretty close to there. What do you think about? Because I know other people around that I know are pretty high on Ja Morant. I think at this point they would take him over RJ Barrett as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe I've been there since the Gonzaga game for Duke, where RJ just decided, I'm going to go lose this game for my team. That's really what happened that night. And those issues with mentality for RJ haven't gone away, especially if I'm, you know, if I'm Trevor Buxton in the Suns front office right now on my personal board for this team. Morant is a mile ahead. I might even have other guys ahead of Barrett, because I don't think people who are worried about Luka and Booker fitting, RJ and Booker are the real concern there. And a guy who has that alpha mentality, who's not going to be a team player quite as much as some of these other Morant, Luka, Zion. So I think it's pretty clear at this point that Morant, especially for the Suns, is higher.
I agree with you. We're both on Team Zion. I don't want to hear the debate about Zion, Morant, but we both know it's going to happen. So if you guys have any qualms or complaints about us, hit us up in our comment section and let us know, because we'll be interested to hear why.
June getting yelled at by fans, that's perfect. I missed it.
We'll be very interested to hear your thoughts on why you believe Ja Morant is better than Zion Williamson. But until then, guys, tonight's game, the Phoenix Suns lost 118-98 to the Detroit Pistons, 17-56 now in the season. I think the next home game is next week against the Washington Wizards. But until then, guys, we'll be